1460-90 AM in Montreal.
For CGL News, I'm Kumaran Sathkarunathan. On Sunday, August 31st, Afghanistan recorded a major earthquake, killing over 1,400 people and injuring over 3,000 people. According to a United Nations official, the earthquake was of magnitude 6 and it collapsed many villages and trapped people under the rubble of their homes. The UN's resident coordinator for Afghanistan points out that Afghanistan has been dealing with multiple crises in recent times. Foreign governments haven't supported them due to the Taliban government, which is only recognized by Russia. On Tuesday, August 26th, Sri Lanka's former president Ranil Wickremesinghe was granted bail after being arrested the week before for the misuse of state funds. According to Sri Lanka's Criminal Investigation Department, in 2023, Ranil and his wife allegedly used state funds for a private visit to the UK. The trip included the graduation ceremony of Ranil's wife, Professor Maitri Wickremesinghe, at the University of Wolverhampton. After his arrest, Ranil Wickremesinghe was admitted to the intensive care unit of the Colombo National Hospital and he was unable to attend his hearing as well. Colombo Fort Magistrate Nilupuli Lankapura issued a bail order based on three surety bails of 5 million rupees each. For the fall 2025 semester, Concordia University and Université de Montréal reported a 37% decrease, while McGill reported 22%. These decreasing numbers are part of the aftermath of the change in governmental priorities and the restrictions put on immigration in Canada and Quebec. A spokesperson for McGill University revealed that these reforms were taken without consulting or considering the university. Furthermore, the spokesperson notes that these measures convey a negative image of the province internationally, resulting in a significant decline in interest in studying at Quebec universities. For more, go to cglo.com/news or follow CGLO News on Spotify.
Yeah.
It keeps me on my toes. Phones ringing, dogs dreaming, while tall grasses grow. A liquor cigarette, I wonder what it meant. Bells cry, glazed over islands in the pink donut sky. Forget about our troubles while we smoke weed in bed.
Welcome to the Voice of the Voiceless on the CJLO 1690 AM. I am Mariam, and today we have, as always, my special co-host Judy and our very special guest today, Hamid Reza. How are you guys? How are you feeling, Judy?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. And how are you, Hamid Reza?
Good. Very excited.
Very excited. I'm very excited to have you on the show. So I'll quickly introduce our guest of today. Hamid Reza is a PhD student from Concordia, and his work is rooted in communication and theatrical arts. He came 2 years ago from Iran, and he was involved in theater, and I believe also you were an actor in Iran. And now he's a director of the new text called The Destroyed. Welcome to our show, Hamid Reza. Very happy to have you here, very excited, and very interested to learn more about the performance that's coming up at Concordia. The Destroyed is far from a traditional commercialized theater performance. Its unique ability is to break the fourth wall by the narrator, who is constantly modifying and reiterating or destroying the world he creates. This really shows how unique and, I guess, surrealistic this show is. So I'm very happy for you to be here. So if you want, tell us about you more. If I missed anything, if you want to share anything with the audience, go ahead.
No, that was really good articulated of me and the show. I wish I could do that as well. But I'm also so excited to be here, and thank you for having me. When I heard the name of the show, like the voice of the voiceless, I was like, wow, this is something that I have to talk about The Destroyed as well, because it resonates greatly with the theme and the way we approached the piece and theater in general.
Yeah, definitely.
So no, I think your description of the show was quiet, rich, and also and I wanted to thank you to have me and giving me the opportunity and my people to talk about this show.
I'm so happy you represent, you know, the show and the people behind the show, so I'm excited that you get to voice out the ideas that you received from everyone. So I'm gonna dive deep into the text, The Destroyed, and we'll just discuss together about this for the rest of the episode. So my first question is, how would you describe The Destroyed to someone who is not familiar with theater or theatrical performances in general?
That is actually easier to describe The Destroyed for someone who doesn't come from a theatrical background, because I would say simply this is an experiment and this is an experience, both for the people who are creating and for the people who are witnessing this performance. Because it's, for me, the theater, or in general, the performance, is a platform for people to confront things or words or voices that they won't be confronting outside of that space. So this is another space that we started to think about creating it with The Destroyed. I wanted the people to be seeing and hearing people who will see and hear outside of the space, but they won't hear the same words coming out of them.
Yeah.
They won't see, they won't hear them performing the narratives that they have, which are so personal, and so they wouldn't be sharing them in a call, in a class, in a workspace. So that, for me, it's a platform for, it's a meeting ground for different people with different backgrounds, with different intentions to be in the same space and be sharing their personal narratives.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful way to describe it.
Like, if you could also explain for the people, like, the story and behind it, just to like, to for them to get to know, to understand what's behind The Destroyed.
Okay, so the questions are very exciting. I'm getting excited.
We're gonna go deeper and deeper, you'll see.
So I'm gonna tell you the story that what made me start working on this text, because I keep saying personal narratives, but it's just like, this is a story written and published 15 years ago, so how is this, like, how these two are connected? So I guess The Destroyed is basically a response, like, responses to different things happening in the world in different places, like in Iran, here in Canada, somewhere in my school during my MA. But the initial idea came out in a class that I had during my master's degree. The class was called Analytical Approach Toward Dramatic Aspects of Persian Literature.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But
this course was in Concordia?
No. It was in my master's back in Iran.
Oh, in Iran. Okay.
Yeah. And throughout the class, I was like, this is a really great name, but such a thing doesn't exist.
Okay.
Like, I don't know how much I can go deep in that realm, but basically, Persian literature, the legacy of Persian literature, is centered to, around the lyrical literature. It's not about drama. So that class was aiming to make us go explore something that didn't exist. And my question for that class was, why should we search for something that wasn't there? Like, why should we fabricate something just to be, I don't know, match ourselves with the Western definition of theater, which is heavily relied on drama?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, we have the text, we can perform it. We don't need to make a drama out of it. We don't need to make a conflict necessarily.
Mm.
We just need to perform the text.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so that was my first proposal of the same story. I thought The Destroyed is a very good story to start performing, not theatrically producing the piece.
Mm-hmm.
So I designed something for that class. And then later, I got the lowest grade for that class, I gotta say. because the teacher was looking for drama. Yeah.
You went out of the norm.
Exactly.
You didn't follow everyone else. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and later I started working with a small group of people to work on that like proposal. It was a sketch of like multiple designs for the scene. The COVID hit.
Okay.
We couldn't keep working on it. And then I got my admission. I came here. And yeah. But this is why this whole thing started.
Yeah. So it started way before
coming
here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
The idea came to me back then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I can tell you the story of what happened here that I started working on.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. You can tell us more about maybe the creative process that you had from the start.
Of course.
If you'd like to share the whole thing if we have time, but mostly at the beginning, like what happened in the beginning for you to arrive today.
Yeah, and how was the team formed and all of that, like the whole process of.
But we can start by the creative process. I guess you're all excited here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm excited. I cannot deny. Okay, I'm gonna tell you what happened here that the creative process started for me. When I came here, I started searching and looking for Persian community, Iranian communities who did theater. And there were a couple of shows that I was introduced to that they were basically what they were doing. They had two different approaches. One was to go for the texts that are nostalgic for the community here, for the diaspora community here, like texts that they came from, I don't know, 50 years ago, 60 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 60 years ago. And the other approach was to work on the Western drama that was translated to Persian. And I asked myself, why should we do that? Like, why should we go for the things that were already censored once? If you want to publish a translation of a play in Iran, you have to get a permission for it
from the government, right?
And to get a permission, you probably get censored because you cannot say anything, like everything, or you wouldn't be published.
Yeah.
So I asked, why should we do that? Like, why should we work with the censorship here as well? That was one observation. I was also interested in seeing more contemporary texts that are, because I guess like this is the case for like most of the cultures and communities. I think the media is overly focused on Western drama and what is happening in Broadway, what is happening in West End, different places in the Western world.
I mean, it has become very commercialized. I feel like people are, you know, just doing a play just, you know, for commercial purposes, to get money, to get the recognition, to get the fame. So
That's true. And I thought, why should we do that? Why shouldn't, like, we introduce something that is ours and it has the quality to be presented? So I started looking for a play, but then I did something here. I did a stage reading of a play, which is contemporary. And then later I thought, why shouldn't I go back to that, to the same idea that I left behind? Okay, this is how the creative process like ignited in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
But I can say like, what happened, how the team created, how the team curated, I would say, I had a workshop here a year ago on acting, and a couple of people joined me. Like, there were five of them who came to the workshop every week, and I could see how dedicated they are. So I reached out to them. I said, like, I have this idea of a performance. Who's in? And three of them said, we are in. Like, let's do this. We gathered one night together, and I told them that, like, I don't know what I'm about to do. I have no idea. I just know that this text is awesome. Mm-hmm. I sent them the text. They said, like, okay, we could see how great the text is, but it was really hard to understand what was happening mm-hmm. with the narrative, because it's a postmodern story, so it's so hard to follow the narrative. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I said, yes, that's why I say I don't know what am I about to do with it. So, yeah, and they just trusted me. That was the first group, four people. We gathered together, we started working. And then this is a bit like details of the creative process, but yeah. to present or perform parts of mm-hmm. the text, it was hard to do it in theater. Like, it was so hard to do it in theatrical ways that I knew.
Okay.
So I said, like, this is kind of a space for another medium, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And so fascinating about theater that it can absorb all the mediums and be still a theater or performance piece.
Yeah.
I like, there was this moment that I said, like, this can be a collection of photos that originally created, but I don't know how to do that. So I reached out to a friend of mine who is a big contributor to this work now, Nastaran.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, like, come join us. And that moment is especially for her. Like, she started creating those images, and then at some point I was like, okay, I can hear a lot of sounds here, noises even, but I don't know how to make him. But I'm sure I'm not gonna be like, I'm not asking for any music to be produced.
So the noises were part of the text? Like,
no.
Okay.
I could hear them, but they weren't like, there were moments that they were specifically mentioned that this sound is here.
Okay.
But no, the main reason was like, I was working on the stage material. I was like, okay, there is something missing, and that is the sound.
The sound. And you were like thinking of the sound and imagining how would this sound,
okay.
Like how would it, okay. Would it be in
okay.
Like exactly. Theater?
Okay. Because I guess there's like a sound element missing to the whole performance. Like, there has to be some sort of...
Exactly. That's sound, when I reached out to Komyor. I said, yeah. Like, Komyor, you have to do something here. And he came and see a part of the performance, and he started improvising.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was using some footages on the stage. I was like, okay, I don't want the raw image, but I don't know what to do with it. So I asked Rebecca to join us. That is how the team was created. There were this moment that I could see, like, the character has to be singing now, and I have a friend who is a soprano, and I asked Saina to come join mm-hmm. us and do the thing. This is how the piece is created.
That's like, amazing.
I started thinking that I can keep the doors open for this performance
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and I can join everybody.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I will be having, like, yeah, later in the performance you'll see, but the whole creative process was for me being able to compromise as my agency, as a director, and to
mm-hmm.
be open to new ideas and understand that this is a platform for people to contribute,
yeah.
And you should just my work was to, like, artistically weave all these elements together,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I'm
yeah.
not even sure if I'm successful, but you'll see it this weekend.
Wow, that's really amazing. I love that how you really, told yourself that I cannot do this on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I need people who can give this artistic perspective and use their talent and showcase their talent. And you were able to get that right away. Not right away, but that mindset you had, you were able to keep it and really believe into it. So I'm glad that you really involved a lot of people mm-hmm. from different backgrounds. That's very special for the show. And that's not really found, I guess, in theater in general. People who are involved in theater, they're usually part of theater most of the time,
mm-hmm.
or they've done months and years of experience. So yeah.
And you choose something outside of the box, which is choosing people who are like not theater students, but they're known, like, they know how to, like, you,
their,
I don't know.
Talent,
yeah, their talent
can relate to performance. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that was the most complicated thing for me, because usually in theatrical world, if you want to do something in such a way, you would say like, okay, I will have my performers who are highly trained with like years of backgrounds in theater, and I will have them for the photos. I will reach out to a photographer and I will ask them to produce something for me. And then I'll go for the composer and the composer will produce something based on the performance. And that is how you weave, weave things together. But I wanted them to be a part of performance as well. So like I didn't have any filtration on the talent or like my only goal was to have people who are contributed to this performance. So yeah, that is my like... That is why I say we are trying to oppose the aesthetics of commercial theater or how aesthetics of professional theater works. Like, we had this discussion once in a rehearsal that I wanted to do something and then people were like, but this sounds amateur. I was like, I know, but but I know how to do it in a professional way, but I want to do it in this way because I... don't like why something is so professional and why something is amateur. Like why,
like who decided, I guess,
exactly where does that definition come from?
Where's the limit?
And like even though like I know how to do this, like specifically it was the way I wanted to cut the music off. So like usually people fade it out or do some effects before fading out. That you know that, okay, this was intentional. But I wanted to be shocking. So I said like, okay, I'm going to turn off the mixer. I don't do it like that. I will turn off the mixer and they will like, but this sounds like amateur. I was like, I know, but I know how to do it. So whether if I'm still amateur because I know how to do it, but this is my artistic choice to do it like that. So yeah, we were, I was like, the question in my mind was that, what is the definition of looking professional or looking amateur? Because these people, they are doing some stuff that, in terms of theatrical, people from dance, from theater, they would have done it differently. But I wanted them to do it in their own way. How is this, how is that amateur? Like, how can you say something like that, that this is amateur because it hasn't been done in a way that the theatrical people will do. That is not my, my manifesto. I want
something
I
that
like
you're fighting
that.
For. What you do is, what is professionalism and what is amateur? There's a limit. And as long as you, when you know what you're doing, does it have to be amateur? Like, you know exactly what you're doing. You know your, you know the goal. You, you have a vision in mind. How can that be immature? So
I think most artists in general, they don't go by the book. On the contrary, they go outside and they follow like a different path, which what, which is what makes them more successful than others. That's how I see it personally.
Definitely, yeah, no, no, I agree. And I also want to go deep into the team curation that you had made. So you already mentioned it previously, but why do you think it's important to curate a multidisciplinary team?
First of all, I guess the necessity came out of the text. First of all, what there were like the need was when I was doing my work on the stage, I could see that there are missing elements. Like, I need a photographer to do this. I need someone who knows how, like, what what are the elements of a sculpture I want them to create for me. So, yeah, I just wanted to see myself, that that character that doesn't know all the thing. Like, I was open. Like, okay, I don't know how to do this. I need to invite someone. And I would say the other important factor in such a decision was that I wanted this piece to be so inclusive. So, like, most of my friends are artists, and I wanted them to be included in this piece as well. Like, because how we are going to oppose commercial theater if that unity isn't, doesn't exist.
Right.
So, yeah, I wanted this piece to be a collective work. And each moment that I felt there is something missing and I need to invite someone, I didn't hesitate and I did that. Like, I could do the dramaturgy part myself, but I would say like, no, let's delegate it to someone who is better than me. Mm-hmm. Let's mm-hmm. do this. I could like do something else, but I said like, no, I should do this with someone who is better than me in this.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how the team is multidisciplinary. Yeah. And also, there are also people who don't come from artistic background, but like their role was necessary for this performance.
They serve for a purpose in
exactly.
the show. Yeah,
exactly.
No, that's very, very beautiful. I love that, as we say always, like it takes a village to build a project. Like you cannot do it on your own. Mm-hmm. Like for me personally, I'm scared to to give some power or some agency to someone who's building a project with me. It's a bit nerve-wracking sometimes, mm-hmm. but you have to tell yourself that, hey, there's people who know better a talent or know something better than me, and they can, you know, provide a better perspective than me sometimes. I do not know everything. So that mentality has to like grow in me, and I'm glad that you have it for this show, and I'm sure it's going to create something beautiful for the upcoming show. We didn't say the date of the show. Mm-hmm. We have to share it. September 12th.
Yeah, next weekend.
Next weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So please get your tickets. And yeah, we can...
It's in Concordia.
Yeah,
it's
in the Evil Building, Black Box, which is in the minus third floor.
Okay, awesome. And did you collaborate with any Concordia professors, or mm-hmm. was Concordia involved in this mm-hmm. in this project?
Yeah, how was it?
I would say this is basically a part of my bigger goal for my PhD.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My PhD has three different aspects, or I have to create three different research creations to set up like the list of inquiries that I'm about to pursue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this is a part of it.
Okay.
So basically I was in contact with my supervisor, and I used all the Concordia spaces that I had access to. So mm-hmm. Concordia is a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
I would say not directly,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, in like different forms. I had talked to my supervisor about it. Like I had access to all this. Rooms and materials because I'm a Concordian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, Concordia had a big role in this. Like, if Concordia was not a part of it, like, it couldn't be possible to do this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. They provide access to multiple ranges of devices,
exactly.
Audio, mm-hmm. film. Yeah, true. So,
a lot of resources.
That's true. Yeah.
It's really nice.
So, be there, and I'll try to be there Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. So, yeah, definitely. I don't know if you have any more questions, or do you want to go in the ads?
We'll go for our ads for a few minutes, and we'll put a song that you suggested, and then we can go on and speak about the music aspect if you guys are interested afterwards.
Yeah.
And the song we're going to play is it's called Rangi by Rez. Do you want to speak like quickly about it or afterwards?
No, it's a song that I like, and it's produced by Ehsan Zia Artur and sang by Rez.
Uh-huh.
Listen to it.
Yes, okay. Let's go.
Enjoy,
excited.
Guys.
Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me.
And have the iconic sounds of cinema?
And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson.
Well, then tune in to At the Movies every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. only on CJLO 1690 a.m. with your hosts,
Remy
and Danny.
جمع سوادم کم روبروی این پهنا کیهان زندگی و بچگی و خستگی و عشق و وابستگی و دنیای پنهان دوری ازم به هم نزدیک بزرگترینی بی تردید زمینمون دور ستاره چرخی حیات تو بازی تفریح پاس بده بزنم گل لب باغچه لیوان آب خالی روی تاخچه چهار فصل اون بیرونه اینجا هم ایرونه ایرونم میمونه هی توی ذهنم تا وقتی که زندم کل این دنیا یه رویاست ایول همشو میدونم از اول همش اینجا بود توی قلبم ترک خورد اما نذاشتم بشکنه نذاشتم بهم بگن چی از چی بهتره وجدان و لخ کردم زدم توی رگم حالا ارتباطش با دلم شده یک سره تا حالا ریخته از دستت یک ذره من دادم مرچا ببرن سره سره پنیر نون کنارشم یک کمی تره جای همه تو خاکه حالا کی بالاتره میشه قسمت کرد جای این که جنگید میشه عشق و فهمید باهاش خندید میشه سیاه نبود سفید نکرد میشه دنیا رو با هم دیگه ببینیم رنگی منو حس میکنی نه نه تو سینت دیگه شده سنگی و سنگین و سنگین تر بیا روی سطح برای روز بهتر
Hello everyone, welcome back on CJLO 1690 AM. We're here at the Voice of the Voiceless with Marianne and Hamdiriza.
Yep.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, sure.
And we were just listening to the song by Rez. And yeah, do you want to explain to us what this song, why did you choose this song? Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Like what does it resonate with you? And maybe then afterwards you can speak, because you did mention that music and plays a big part in the theater, like that's how you saw it. And can you talk about like how these elements contribute to the experience and to the text itself?
Of course. So first of all, this song is, I chose it because I love it.
I loved it too. Yeah, definitely. I'm not really used to listening to Persian songs, but yeah. This is something that is different, but I love it. Yeah.
So I like the melody and stuff, and like I see the contemporary progressive Iranian art so connected to hip hop, which has taken a different shape and which has taken a different path as opposed to Western rap or American rap. So that's why I like it, and also the text is also resonating with how I see this piece, The Destroyed.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
When you ask me what can I propose for the song, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I should choose something that also resonates with how I approach this text.
Yeah.
So I would say like keeping things simple, not getting too complicated with stuff, even though the show is complicated, like
mm-hmm.
the things that the people are doing are complicated, but
yeah.
Not setting high stakes for stuff that are happening in the theater for me was like maybe one of my elements in my approach toward this.
Yeah.
No, it's very nice, like stated and everything, like it really stated it nicely, so thank you for that. And how it resonates with the Persian art and all of that, but what would you want the audience to take from this text?
Yeah, for sure. So basically at a moment, I'm going to circle back to the role of the sound in
mm-hmm,
my piece,
yes.
And then I'll explain this.
Of course.
Yeah, I would say not the music, but the sound
mm-hmm.
Plays a crucial role in the performance, because dramaturgically, how you present the piece in a sound sphere is also important in setting up a new way of relationship between your stage and the audience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I would say, like core elements of my aesthetic comes from the way Kamyar is playing the sound.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would say the way electronic music approaches the music in general,
mm-hmm.
after John Cage, I would say, is so resonating with how we are trying to do the thing in contemporary theater as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And by we, I mean theater people, mm-hmm. yeah. in this case.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, like trying to stay away from being beautiful necessarily, being creating something that is beautiful, like
right,
the
right.
word beautiful
I
is
mean,
what
the I text is called The Destroyed, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you have to like showcase something that's
beautiful,
that's not necessarily destroyed, but I would say maybe that's in the works of being destroyed, you know,
exactly.
something
mm-hmm.
like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. True. So the music can, you know, align with the text. So
yeah. That's why, like, you won't hear a lot of melody or harmony in the, like, you would hear that, but it's not the core or not the ultimate goal of Kamyar when he is improvising mm-hmm. to like create something that is beautiful. We are trying to create some atmosphere,
yeah,
and that's the role, and that's why the role of the sound becomes crucial,
mm-hmm.
because it sets the tone of the
right,
stage.
Yeah, for sure. Right.
Yeah, whatever we do on the stage can take a different shape when Kamyar is playing something different.
Right, right.
And the interesting fact about how we collaborate with Kamyar is that he doesn't produce the music before the scene, he just improvises every time.
Okay.
So every time you will hear it differently. And
so even now, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but no. I had a very quick question, which was like, even now, next week, will he be improvising or
yep.
will he will be improvising?
Yeah. There's
okay.
So you gotta come and see, but there are two desks on the stage. One is for me, for Beck and Kamyar, mm-hmm. and the three of us are improvising.
Okay.
Like there
okay.
are some elements that have decided before,
mm-hmm.
but the rest will happen on the stage. So
okay.
we will
amazing.
Improvise. And
yeah.
Kamyar, Beck, they are improvising. I am improvising a part of my work. But yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Will the actors improvise? I mean, I'm giving out too much here, but I guess this is like a lot of improvisation going on. But of course, there has been a lot of work behind it, obviously. Yeah.
I would say there is the being open to incidents is
yeah.
a part of my design for this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So no, they are not improvising, but they are working with materials that they may not work every time like they did before.
Okay.
So the second desk that I didn't tell you about is where they craft and they project the video of their crafts to the screen.
Okay.
And they're working
okay.
with materials. They're working with water, with ink,
awesome.
Different stuff,
yeah,
and they
yeah.
might work differently each time,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
you cannot completely control that, but you're projecting it. So yeah, like being open to that is a part of the core design of this performance.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
yeah they are improvising.
Yeah, no, that's the beauty of it. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah, there has to be there to improvise. You need to like be comfortable in what you're doing. That's
mm-hmm.
that's very important, and I guess a lot of work has to go into that. So yeah,
true,
yeah,
true,
yeah,
true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with her. Like, it's really nice to see that it's improvising, because for me, like, I feel like art in general is not one specific way we go through.
Mm.
Like, it's going out of your way, you know, like, and choosing
true.
Like different paths or different like how do I say that? Like a different making different choices that
exactly.
are unique choices. This
exactly.
was the word. Yeah, so it's
exactly.
really nice to see that. Going on with like the questions, can you like maybe explain how this project attempt and explain the project attempt in decolonizing Iranian heritage and culture?
Okay, so I would say not only Iranian heritage, but I would say like how this project is trying to set an. I mean, surely there is this discourse happening in Montreal as everywhere else in the world, but I wanted to be a part of it. But I would say, like, I wanted to oppose the fact that the world is designed in a way that only theater people could make theater.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't like that. I can see why. I can understand the reasoning behind that because of that professionalism.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is true that not so many people can study theater
mm-hmm.
because of different things. Like, I couldn't do my bachelor in theater. I did my bachelor in electrical engineering because my family didn't want me to do. So in that case, shouldn't I be able to produce theater? Mm-hmm, like, why? Because a decision I made or my family made for me in my 18 years old, like, how, why?
Right.
And yes, I can pursue like different workshops outside of academia, but that needs a lot of money. And so, okay, we are avoiding a group of people because they don't have the money to create theater. I wanted this piece to be setting up a conversation about who should do theater and why everyone should be able to do performance. Yeah, that was my goal of doing this piece. So I would say this is the biggest manifesto of this work. That's why I work with people who are not from theater. And I also work with people who are not from any arts. Like, they have a full-time job, they have the formal educations in different sectors, and they're like doing very well in their job. But I wanted them to be a part of this. And because at some point they showed passion about theater. And yes, that's my ultimate goal, to empower people to be able to perform at least their own narratives. Because I think when you marginalize people for different reasons based on different oppressions, they wouldn't be able to be heard and not being seen. And if you empower them to like make them able to do performance based on their personal narratives or their own aesthetics, what happens is that In a longer run, you will have a more democratic space for people to contribute. So that's like, it's not only about the Iranian heritage, but it's also about like opening the doors for different people to be able to be seen and to be heard, and not labeling them as amateur and calling their arts not worthy.
No, giving respect to their name, I guess. Exactly. Definitely. No, I really find it interesting in the fact that, because we've always seen theater, even here or in many parts of the world, as something that is closed doors, like it's closed to most of the population. And if you ever think about even doing theater, that's like just a dream, right? Like, you'll never get up there. Like, there's so many obstacles. People kind of discourage you sometimes, friends, family. So providing that space and opening doors to people who have that spark in them and who, you know, have maybe thought in their lives that, oh, hey, maybe I can do theater, but like, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know when. And you providing that opportunity for them, because they have to be somewhat interested in theater, right? Like, you cannot just not anyone says yes to this opportunity. There has to be some spark in them. So I find that interesting. And also the audience it themselves will be a diverse set of audience, right? Because since you're including so many people from different spaces, the people who will come will also be from different spaces. So you're not only providing an accessible theater for people who are working there, but also you're providing an inclusive, accessible space for the audience. So many people from different backgrounds will, of course, come and see your show, and who are not necessarily mature audience of theater, right?
That's true.
So that's that's super interesting to view it as.
And it's so nice, like, how you're giving the space for people to come and share their ideas or share their story or share their talent to the people, even though because they don't have it, because, as you said, because of certain circumstances or because no one really opened the door. So for you to open the door for people to come and join and do this show with you, it's really nice. And you are also becoming a platform, as a like the voice of the voiceless platform.
You are.
It's actually literally like that, you know, like if you think about it, you're becoming like the same thing, you know?
In a human form.
That is a huge burden, but
we're doing it in a radio show, you're doing it in a human form.
That is true. And I love the fact that it also opens the door for different people who are, as you said, like, they're not professional theater goers, that they might not, like, they go to a theater piece once in a while, but now they're here to see their friends, they're performing and they're bringing another friend.
Yeah.
And they confront this manifestation, like, because I guess, yes, in terms of commercial theater, we are different.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying, like, we are, because if I wanted to entertain people, I would have failed anyway. If my art wanted to entertain anyone, I would have failed anyway, like, because I'm not an entertaining person myself. How can I, my art, but with my art, I can I?
You cannot please anyone. Yes. You cannot please everyone either. So
Netflix can, probably, but now I cannot, no, I don't want to. Yeah. So yes, I'm bringing different people. I'm not saying like I want to make them enjoy my piece, but I wanted them to confront my piece.
Right.
I want them to see these people
who
are different, who are sharing stories that you wouldn't hear outside of that room.
Yeah.
And that's my ultimate goal. I want people to be seeing stuff that they couldn't see before.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, you can develop a friendship over years and intimacy to get that story out of someone, because of the magic of the stage, you can hear it now.
No, I think the uniqueness and that how different it is from usual theater, I think that will make something ignite in the audience. They will think about it, like, be maybe critical about it, have their own opinions and thought about it, and that's what you want from someone who's looking at your show, right? You don't want someone to only enjoy it. Like, you want some engagement and some thoughts going through their mind. So definitely, I'm very excited for the show. And maybe I have one more question. But we mostly answered all of them, honestly. Performances. Do we have anything interesting?
Maybe you can explain about where did you get the text from, because you mentioned in our when we did the call, you mentioned that you were inspired by someone. If you can, you got the story from an artist, from a writer, from a book, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah. I can tell you the story how I got introduced to this text.
Exactly.
I had a friend. His name is Sader. And Sader once told me, we were talking about how it's important to start a short story.
Mm-hmm.
And he was giving me examples of a writer that I didn't know back then. And he was like, this is one of his story. And he was saying it from his, like, memory. Mm-hmm. He memorized them because they were so great to start a story. Like, one of them was like this. A fortune teller told my mother that he can find my sister who was lost for 10 years. Like, this is the first sentence of a story. Like, how can you stop reading it? Like, you should go till the end.
Yeah.
Or the other one was, I'm going to tell you a love story about Uncle David, whom I never met until his day of death.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Okay,
it
opens the curiosity here.
Yeah,
exactly.
You want to know how this
exactly
happened.
Yeah.
And for me, the other one was, everything must be destroyed, every moment and you. And this is the beginning of the story of the destroyed.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this is a powerful beginning. Like, I want to, like, read this story. And that's how I got introduced to this writer, Abu Torab Khosravi, which I was in contact because I needed his, like, intellectual... It is his intellectual property, so I got the permission from him.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in contact, and I told him what I have done to his story. And he was like, good luck. You have done so many things. This is how I got interested in his writings. Like, he has so many great writings. Unfortunately, none of them has been translated to English. So this is the first time that here, at least in Montreal or Canada, we are performing a piece by him in English.
Amazing.
And
French
and Persian.
Persian too.
Three languages. Also in French?
Yeah, the primary language is English,
mm-hmm.
but you will hear and read some French and Persian, which are not translated. Like, they are there. They are part of the text.
Oh, really?
But you gotta tolerate the moments that you don't understand.
Oh, that's amazing. That's part of it. Yeah, multidisciplinary and multi-language.
Trilingual.
Yeah, definitely. No, we are very happy for you to be here on the show, and I really, really want to find the time to come to your show. Hopefully I can make it, and hopefully everyone who's listening can make it too.
Sure.
Before we end the show, I wanted for you to maybe name out a few of the team members. We have like a few, 3-4 minutes left, so if you'd like to give a shout out to everyone who was involved in this project, that would be great.
Yeah, of course. I'm going to go fast and I'm going to say all the names. Yeah. Shadi Yazdani, who is our producer and performer, Saina Ali Khani, our singer and performer, Amira Pakdel, which is our performer, Nastaran Purtahirian, the photographer and performer, Pani Bulbulad Abadi, our performer, Parsa Sahidian, performer, Sayed Hamid Sadat Barikani, which is the stage manager, and at some moment he will perform. Christian Sosa, our videographer, Shahab Nizam Dost, my dear friend and dramaturg, Emerson Zarifian, graphic designer, Masood Pakdel, photographer, Rebecca Akon, video artist, Kamyar Karimi, sound designer, Rafael Behar, our media relation manager, Mina Bahra, my artistic director, my assistant director, sorry. So this is the team. We are a big team now. But yeah, this was the group of people.
Bravo. Yeah. Bravo to everyone who was part of the show, and bravo to you, the director of the show, Hamid Reza. Should we end the show now, or do you have anything to say, Judy?
I want to ask you if you have anything to say, like for the people who wants to come here and who wants to come to your show. What are what are your last sayings for the people to
Okay, I will say please come to this show. We have been working on this for 5-6 months. It was hectic and we did it. Just please come and support, and thank you too for having me and giving me this opportunity to talk to your people.
Of course. Thank you for reaching out.
Definitely. You're listening to Voice of the Voiceless on CJLO 1690 AM. Make sure to tune in every Monday 6 PM next week. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, guys. Bye-bye. See you.
Bye-bye.
Grant made up of local films and international new releases, classics and little-known nuggets, as well as short films and family screenings. Our tickets are among the cheapest in Montreal, $10 for a regular entry or $8 for students, children, and seniors. We also offer 6-ticket movie cards for even more savings. Come see us at Casa d'Italia, just across from Jean Talon Metro, and visit cinemapublic.ca to discover our programming. Le Cinéma Public, for a lively cinema.
Do you love hip-hop and R&B? Is your Thursday afternoon lacking groove? I'm DJ Samuel V. Roberts, and I got you covered. Listen to my show, Whip Appeal. I'll be playing hip-hop bangers, R&B slow jams, and everything in between from Canada and around the globe to groove up your Thursday afternoon. Listen to Whip Appeal, Thursdays at 2 p.m. CJLO 1690 AM.